Hey, man, Last Couch Mike here, lastcouchmike.com. Premium guys, you are so awesome. Thank you so much for your support of the site. Special thanks to our good buddies at Crossover for helping to make all this possible. You know, I don't know what to say. An incredible podcast with Coach Dave Petromala from Hopkins. Actually, our fourth. I mean, I think it was 2009, 2011, 2014. Just go in the search box on my site and you got to listen to these. But this podcast, you're going to get great stuff. We got to open with the Candy Bowl. If you don't know what that is, we always talk to Petro about that. You got to go back to that first podcast. Pretty amazing. His talking about capturing the hearts of kids. You may not expect it from him, but there's a lot to this guy. We go over clearing drills with a keep-away look, a full-field face-off look with transition, how he's changed the way he runs his 6v6s, some dialogue about his health, which obviously in 2016 was a huge, huge issue. And then at the end, we kind of got into a dialogue about, you know, I'm running more and more skeleton stuff, and if you got your offense running skeleton, you're looking for meaningful stuff for your pulls. Gave us a lot of great ideas there, too, and that's actually in the article section. Anyway, thank you for the coaches, clinics, the ebooks, all the stuff you've done for me. I'm truly humbled by all of you. Without further ado, a great friend of the LaxCoachMike.com family and a podcast going to give you a ton of new ideas, Coach Dave Petromala, Johns Hopkins. Thank you, Crossover.
Hey, LaxCoachMike here, LaxCoachMike.com. It is another great day. Welcome back for actually the fourth time with us. Coach Petromala, Johns Hopkins. Coach, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I didn't realize this was the fourth time, huh?
Yeah, I'm so old, I don't remember the first. I think it was 2009. And then in preparation for this, because, you know, you've used such unbelievable vocabulary with me in the last couple of podcasts, you know. I think pontificate was in one and words like that. I don't get it, but... So I wanted to make sure I was really prepared for this interview. So I went back, and I encourage listeners to go back and listen to the 2011 podcast and the 2014. And believe it or not, Coach, there's still one of the most popular drills on our site is the slugger drill.
Yeah, that's a great one. That's a great one. We still do it in practice quite a bit. So.
Well, I mean, I think you explained it pretty good, and I wrote an article on it, and I didn't explain it that great. So yeah, the guys that are running it for the first time, I get, emails and phone calls, all the time till they figure it out. Mostly try to figure out how to get the four defensive guys in that end of the field when the team goes the other way. But anyway, and then, so go back, listeners, go back and listen to that stuff. And then, actually I was hurting for a drill for my lax power column, Coach, and, I did the, we have four guys kind of in the offensive end, but one guy passes and then it's a 2v2.
Yeah, sure. We do something similar off of the screening game.
Yeah, go ahead.
We do something like that off a screening game. We'll put it's a half field set. We could do it at two half fields. You know, just depending on your team numbers, and we'll put cones right down the middle from the top of the box right to the top of the crease, and we'll start a guy with a ball on one side, and on the other side of the cones. Two offensive players, two defensive players. You know, in our motion offense, we're trying to simulate parts of our hole, and we're working on the screening and picking game. So whistle will blow, and the two offensive guys on the other side of the cones will work together. They'll set screens, they'll rescreen, backdoor, and what we're trying to do is obviously spring a guy open either for a layup or spring a guy open with some space for a shot. And if we can't do either of those, you know, we get a guy open. He receives the ball from the single offensive player on the other side of the cones. Now it's a 2v2, and we're setting picks in different areas of the field. We're setting them on the hash marks. We're setting them at goal line. All this is taking place above the goal, but we're trying to work on the picking and screening game, both offensively and defensively. And for us, that's a big part of what we're doing offensively in our motion offense. So it's helping our guys actually learn how to screen. Learn how to pick, learn how to use the screen, use the pick, how to, you know, fade or flare off the screen, how to backdoor. And then defensively, obviously, you know, you're working on, you know, your screening and picking game. You're working on your one-on-one defense, your communication. So it's just parts of the whole in both our offense and our defense.
Yeah, and for the listeners, if you really want to check it out, and I think maybe I put a schematic up on it too. Not in any way, shape, or form to promote, you know, any websites or anything, but in my article series on Lax Power, just look under July 2016, and you'll read how Coach described that drill to me and how to get started with a schematic and all that. Anyway, none of that is important. Every interview with you, since the first one, has to start in the exact same way, and you've had really disappointing answers over the last 4 years, man, so this is your opportunity to step up, okay?
Okay.
Tell me the candy jar has back to having Snickers and chocolate in it, not the energy bars and the sucker candy. Tell me about the candy bowl.
You know what? Coach Benson's got the candy bowl. I'm not sure he's as dedicated to getting the finer candies that he used to, but the candy jar still is in Coach Benson's office. And, you know, for those people that don't know, you know.
Well, they all know, man. My listeners know because I talk about it all the time.
Well, you know what's happened here is, you know, our new facility, the Cordish Lacrosse Center, has changed things quite dramatically for us. And, you know, whereas before the candy jar was, you know, something for a guy to come in, grab a piece of candy, sit down, you know, and you know, hopefully you wind up talking about a whole lot more than just lacrosse. You know, which is for, you know, it encouraged players to come around, grab a piece of candy, and be around the coaches and in the offices. With the Cordish Lacrosse Center, you know, they're here all the time, whether it's playing Xbox, you know, in the lounge, grabbing something to eat here, you know, studying, or watching TV. They are in this facility all the time, and obviously being here, they see us even more. So, you know, the candy jar is still there. I'm not sure Coach Benson's got as good a candy as he used to. I can tell you Coach Janine Tucker, our women's coach, she got the candy drawer down in her office, which I sneak down there and grab something now and again. She's really got it going on with the candy. But the facility's really kind of taken over for what the purpose of the candy jar was, but he still has it.
Yeah, the I was in with some guys. I was speaking at the U.S. Lacrosse Convention in 2015 and snuck out Saturday to watch you guys scrimmage Denver. And I was with some guys from Atlanta that Coach Dwan has run camps for down here.
Yep.
And took us through the facility. And, I mean, if you ever get a chance to go to Homewood, man, you got to check this out. It is, I mean, to say state-of-the-art is falls short of exactly how gorgeous and well thought out it is. I mean, it's mind-blowing phenomenal.
Yeah, you know, it's a smaller version of a football facility. It's a $10 million facility, two floors, locker rooms, you know, kind of got a museum basically part of it. You know, what it does is great for families that we're recruiting, you know, to get a sense for the rich history and tradition of Hopkins Lacrosse and the commitment that we have here. You know, for our guys, I mean, they walk in and they're constantly reminded of what they're a part of. It helps them, you know, develop a respect and reverence for the people that came before them and have helped create, you know, this tradition. And it helps remind them each day they walk in of the standard that, you know, we're here to meet and exceed. So it's been great. We're blessed. We had great donors. We're blessed that they were so generous and, you know, we learn how to use it a little bit more every day. We're in year three now and we think we've kind of got this thing figured out but it's been a great benefit for not only recruiting, and for our staff, but our players and for our alumni to have a central place to call home.
Well, it's got the heritage, but it's also got a kind of come hang out here feel.
It does. You know, we designed it for the players, you know, from a player's perspective. We wanted it to be a place where they want to be, you know, so everything with a screen's got DirecTV on it. There's Xbox. There's food here. The couches are here. Kids can take naps between classes.
What about Pokemon, you know, man? Is Pokemon there? I mean, yeah.
You know what? I don't think I don't know if many of our guys got Pokemon. Was it Pokemon Go now?
Yeah, don't kid yourself, man. Don't kid yourself.
Yeah, probably not. We haven't caught any of them walking around the building just yet with their phone out looking to catch Pokemon.
I was so blessed, man. I spent the weekend with family back in Pittsburgh, and I got a 26-year-old nephew. He actually does the filming for Penn State Hockey. And it was a high school, and he played at Robert Morris. But I got to sit down with him outside, and I said, okay, man, I see it on Facebook and social media. I don't have a clue. Tell me what this is, you know. And
yeah,
he went
through
it for me. And now I'm convinced that it's a government conspiracy, man. I think, you know, in 20 years, it's going to be like one of those futuristic movies, Coach, you know, where they went back and found out that all this stuff was planted in our young people's heads.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? I found out about it at our last camp. I have twin boys, as you know, they come to the camp the last night, and they work the camp. They help sling the Gatorades, and my son Nicholas helps Coach Benson, you know, handle all the pizzas, and they both help with the raffle. And I'm watching kids walk all over the dorms, and I asked what was going on, and my kids explained it to me. You know, and all of a sudden I get concerned that these kids are going to start walking out the dorm in the middle of the night, you know, looking for Pokemon. And sure enough, that night I come up to the office to wrap things up here, and there's people that are here, you know, doing summer session, and they're walking around out in the, you know, out in the circle in front of the athletic center, and, you know, they got their phones out. It's amazing. I don't get it, but it's amazing.
I couldn't agree with that comment more. And I got some stuff I want to ask you, man, going through the stats and some of these other podcasts. But, you know, for the people that don't know, before we get off the facility for just a second and the feel of that, you know, in the first podcast, there's an amazing story, you know, you told about a player that you were going to jump and then you realized he had stuff going on in his life and you kind of gained a renewed perspective for understanding, you know, what goes on in their life. And then... You know, in our last podcast, you in 14, you reiterated that, saying you got to get out of their heads and into their hearts to a degree, and you had a meeting and kind of changed, making sure that we're positive. I mean, I know from talking to you and briefly seeing you speak and going up and talking to you a couple of times, you know, the guys that see you on the sidelines have no idea, I don't think, or see on TV of how huge your heart is and the empathy you have for the kids. And I don't want to dwell on the season in 16, but I think just being separated then from a period of time had to be as painful as the serious pain and the injuries that you have.
You know, it's been a tough 2 years, you know, for a lot of reasons, and I don't mean that, you know, in regards to wins and losses. I don't
Absolutely.
Mean it in regards to necessarily play on the field. You know, in 2015, we sadly lost a young man that played for us, Jeremy Huber, died of natural causes, and you know, that's a whole different world. And to
where was
see
he from, Coach? Colorado or something?
He was from Las Vegas.
Or Las Vegas.
And, yep, son of Bob and Nancy Huber, who are just wonderful people. Brother is Justin. And when you lose a kid, and any coach that has, you know, it's a situation that, you know, no one's prepared for. No, there's no book for it. There's no right, no wrong. And you're just trying to do your best to take care of your people. And to see 50 young men, you know, whose hearts are broken and who don't understand why. You know, and as the coach, you're supposed to have the answers. You're supposed to have all the answers as to what, why, and how. So we dealt with that, and to the young men's credit and to my assistant coach's credit, and to the institution's credit, they all did a great job of helping us try to work through this, you know, the way we thought was most appropriate, and not just for our lacrosse family here at Hopkins, but for the Hubers as well. You know, last year we have just a rash of injuries, and you know what? That's athletics. That's just the way it goes. You know, no one's going to feel sorry for yourself, for you. That's part of sports. And we lost, you know, three of our top middies, and then we wound up losing four of our top seven. And unfortunately, you know, when we lost those guys, we lost some of our better athletes as well. And, you know, we wound up, you know, trying to make a run at this thing and, you know, got to the NCAA playoffs again. you know, didn't win a Big Ten championship like we had the year prior and didn't get to the Final Four. And no matter what, you know, despite the injuries, those standards don't change. And that's why they're standards. And it was a really valuable lesson for our guys to understand that everybody needs to prepare like a starter, because we had young men who would have been on our third midfield, you know, some running on our first, some on our second, you know, and they're thrown into a much greater role with a ton more responsibility. And
they played good down the stretch, man. They played good down the stretch.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, they did some good things, and I'm proud of them. But you know, the point is that everybody prepares like a starter, and then you know, when your moment comes, you're ready to grasp that moment rather than, you know, having to say, okay, now I got to, you know, I got to learn all this stuff. Now I got to be able to understand these techniques or these schemes. And then, you know, unfortunately, I had a bout with a back infection, and it kept me away from my team for about 21 days. And I would tell you,
3 weeks.
Yeah, you know, you think about being away from your kids, you know, for 3 weeks, and you know, for me, and I'm sure for many coaches, that's exactly what it's like. You know, these guys are mine. They're my guys. They're my kids, and to not be out there with them, to not be able to help them, you know, to try and, you know, help in any way I could from a hospital bed, which was quite frankly not very much, you know, was awful disappointing. You know, as a coach, you feel like you're letting your guys down. And, you know, that's how I felt. I felt like I was letting my team down, my staff down. And, you know, gosh, you think of, you know, the position that puts your assistant coaches in. And, you know, Bill Dwan, Bob Benson.
Bill did a great job, I thought.
You know what? He, Bob, Larry Quinn, and Tim Obransky, who's our director of operations, those guys couldn't have done a better job. You know, they get a great win against Syracuse in overtime, a tough loss against Virginia. The Rutgers loss was just a bad loss in general, to a very good team, by the way. You know, but, you know, here you are, and you have all these injuries, and you're dealing with them, and your team's not quite what it could or should be. And now you take the head coach away, and you tell these couple guys, all right, you know, here's your head coaching debut. Have at it. And, you know, to Bill's credit as the associate head coach, he did wonderful, wonderful things. I have the utmost confidence in those guys. I know they handled things just as I would have wanted to handle them. They handled the team in a very appropriate fashion. You know, and, you know, despite the injuries we had, our offense had a great year. Bobby Benson, you know, doesn't get enough credit for, you know, being the architect of an offense that's, you know, a little bit different, but really takes advantage of our, you know, the skill set of our players. You know, and Larry Quinn did a good job with a new goalie. So I'm blessed to have those guys, and quite frankly, really excited to welcome back all these guys from injuries and have, you know, a whole team back together. We're excited, certainly motivated and hungry.
Awesome, man. Well, and you know, I want to get onto this stuff, but I mean, at the end of the day, you know, the players got to have thoughts of you in their heart every day, especially. I mean. Yeah, I don't want to talk about it, but I mean, at the end of the day, what you have is really serious. You could have died, man.
Well, you know what? I don't know if I could have died, but certainly I was told if I didn't take care of it right then and there, I wasn't going to walk again. So when someone tells you that, you know, your first thought's right to your children. And, you know, for me, that was, you know, I haven't been scared a whole lot in my life, Mike. And, you know, I'm not embarrassed to admit the fact that when I was told that, you know, I was scared. And thankfully, had a great doctor, man, a great doctor, Justin Tortolani, former Princeton lacrosse player. And
but is he a Hopkins grad? That's the question.
You know what? He is not a Hopkins grad. And I went to him because I knew him and I knew how good he was, and he was as advertised. He was great. The people at the hospital were great. Our alums, our parents, and our kids were great. So, you know, in a tough situation, they all made it much easier for me and my family.
Well, I just, you know, before we go on to practice, man, when I need a podcast and I can't get one, you're always there for me, man. And, you know, we don't have a friend relationship, but I think the world of you, and am quick to tell everybody, you know, the sides of you that maybe they don't see that you kind of revealed when you spoke to U.S. Lacrosse about culture, incidentally.
Yeah, you know, people see what they see on TV, Mike.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And that's okay. That's what they see and what they know. And, you know, my concern
I didn't mean it so much good and bad. You know, no, I really didn't, you know.
Right.
I mean, you
no,
know, I
have
just
see what they see.
Yeah, I have a reputation for not being great with parents, you know. Because, you know, at the high school level, don't call me if Johnny's got a doctor's appointment or he's got a test. I mean, I understand that. But Johnny needs to contact me. Well, in
right.
today's world, they don't even email, right? They text.
Well, yes, they do. Either that or they, you know, they Snapchat you or, you know, whatever it may be.
So my first practice, you know, with every new team, you know, I'm coaching a small Christian school now, which is, I had to take a step back from my ego, but, I mean, great kids, only 150 kids in high school made it to the state quarterfinals. I mean, they just overachieved.
Right.
But at the end of the day, the first practice is, okay, everybody get your bags, get your cell phones. You know, I don't want to hear from your mom. And people interpret that as, you know, you don't care about the parents. They just, you want me to treat your son like an adult, I'm treating your son like an adult, you know.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. You know, we live in a different world now with social media, and, you know, we have to not only educate these kids, but sometimes you got to protect them from themselves. You know, I don't think they know, you know, the responsibilities of that camera phone or that tweet that they put out, and, you know, you're putting something out there for everybody to see, and, you know, text messaging, there's no determining tone, and, you know, so, you know, kudos to you for, you know, trying to help them become better young men.
Yeah. Hey, man, okay, so we did our kumbaya thing. I mean, we're holding hands over the phone here and had a campfire out, maybe s'mores. That was good. I want to talk about practice, man. You had some much different things inserted in your practice from 2014 going back to 2011. I want to touch base on some of those. You had gone to a kind of philosophy of which, you know, other coaches were doing with transition drills, but as soon as the guys came out and had a little bit of warm-up and their dynamic, according to my notes, you were going right into a five-minute scrimmage under the premise of emulating a game scenario, getting the kids ready to come out and play they would in that kind of scenario in real life. Is that a practice you stayed with since I talked to you last, Coach?
Yeah, we still do that. We don't do it every day, but we do it. And obviously, you know, your goal as a coach is to simulate, you know, game-like situations and game-like experiences. And you know, we'll occasionally go back in the locker room after we, you know, stretch out, go back in the locker room, come back out, stretch out again, and then, you know, and face it off. You know, we got to do that sometimes. You know, you try to put your men in a position where they've had those game-like situations already. They practiced them, you know, in practice. So we still do that. You know, we'll come out, we'll stretch, and then we'll go right to a different drill. We'll go to clearing. You know, clearing was, you know, kind of a thorn in our side this year. And so we spent a little bit more time with it as the year went on, and, you know, rather than just coming out and, you know, stretching and going to the stick work and shooting and kind of easing into practice, we'd go into stretching and then we'd play a keep-away drill. We'd
yeah.
play between the restraining box and the midline, and we'd break the team up in half, and we'd put seven guys out there on defense and six on offense, and we'd go double-team the ball, and they'd have to work in a very confined area to move the ball. You know, we're teaching them to move toward the ball, to move their feet when they catch, move their feet when they throw, to anticipate pressure, to move to open space, to play with their head up. So we did a little bit of that a bunch of times. And then, you know, then we go into, you know, the traditional parts of...
I hesitate to even ask you if you got a sexy name for that drill, because aside from Slugger, you've fallen way short on sexy names of drills. But you're not alone in that. Every coach I've interviewed 140 hours in podcast now is the same.
You know what? Yeah, keep away.
Atta boy.
You know me. I'm looking to set the standard in names. I'm as vanilla gets when it comes to that stuff. So we'll play keep away, and then we'll get into the, you know, the more traditional stuff. You know, on other days we'll come out and we'll get right after it with a ground ball drill. You know, for us, you know, there were four areas we kind of felt like we fell short last year. We felt like our skills, we just needed to do more. We needed to improve those. Our riding and clearing, that part of the special teams area, we needed to be better at, and ground ball play and then broken or transition play. So as the year unfolded, we started to do more of that stuff, and in particular doing a little bit more of that after we had a dynamic warm-up, loosened up a little bit. You know, we tried to get after it in some of those, one of those four areas.
Yeah, you know, we get a great drill from J.B. Clark. It's on the website. It's a clearing drill, but he has the field broken into like three zones, and there's actually a keep away in the defensive end, a keep away, kind of what I would call that short zone area, you know, where guys are packing it in now, you know, trying to keep you out of transition and whatnot on the
yep.
clears or on their rides. And then when they go down, it's an unsettled into a look at it. Yeah, same kind of thing. It's a really, really cool drill the way he has the field broken up. Yeah. So after we and for the coaches out there, if you've got a high school squad and you can't really go 10v10, if you got 22 guys or 24 guys, you know, even some kind of three-quarter field transition just to set the tone so the guys are coming out and playing and then, you know, keep score or some kind of accountability so that they're taking it serious. Or competition is probably a better word to use, coach?
No doubt. I mean, what you hope you can do is you try to, you know, there are certain drills that you're going to just focus on one thing. You know, whether that be ground ball play, whether it be,
Sound like you, man. You've always been the king of the multitasker.
Well, we still do that. We still do it. You know, we got a drill, you know, it's called the retriever drill. So again, I'm not setting the world on fire with the name. Stolen from my old coach, Don Zimmerman. It's a drill where you...
No, we've got it on the site, coach. We've got it on the site.
Yeah, you go.
Up. It's
so,
a 65 to a 66 to a
yes,
clear.
Yes, sir. To a clear, to a ride and a clear, and then back to transition again. You know, so I think a lot of us as coaches are trying to find different ways to do more than one thing, to attack more than one specific area, in a drill. And if you can, you know, do multiple things, and no offense, there are certain things that you got to just say, you know what, we got to focus on just this. So, you know, we did something this year where we faced off, and one way, if you went down to one end, there'd be two defenders and three offensive players, and if you went the other way, there'd be two defenders and three offensive players. So off of a face off, you know, you're breaking, you're doing face-off work, you're doing wing work, and then all of a sudden you're going down to a broken situation with an offensive advantage. So I think we're all trying to find ways to create more game-like situations and to attack different areas within one drill.
Yeah, I think the one thing that we've heard a lot over the last 12 months, coach, is or even 14 months is historically, the D-middies were playing D-middy in the retriever drill. You know, we're seeing so many coaches now integrate their D-middies into the offensive guys that are bringing the ball down.
Yeah, you know what? And I think at times Johns Hopkins, we become a little too specialized. And, you know, our hope is this year we're going to move a kid from close defense back to the long stick. We got a freshman who's now a sophomore that we think has an awful lot of potential. And, you know, we'd like to allow those guys to play a little bit more. We'd like to allow those guys to go down and play in the picking game a little bit more or roll behind and, you know, set a flat pick somewhere at the goal line extended and, see if we can create a mismatch or a switch or something like that, keep a face-off guy on the field, you know, and maybe just say, hey, you know what, let's run a simple deuces set or a 1-4 and, you know, let one of these short sticks go a little bit and dodge and play. And if we don't have anything, then we can sprint them off and maybe trap a guy or two on the field. So we're hoping to do a little bit more of that this year. I don't think we've done a good enough job as a staff of doing those things. I think we got to do a little bit more of, the substitution picking, stuff like that to take advantage of quick strikes, some early offense, and create some easy scoring opportunities. And certainly it'll help us, defending that in practice because we're seeing it from some of our opponents.
You know, it was interesting, man. I think it was the fourth or fifth game in last year. We were doing another podcast with Lars Tiffany. And somehow, some way, I don't even remember the genesis of it, but they had somebody keeping track of playing time, you know, in terms of minutes, and they broke it down, offense and defensive minutes. And after their fourth or fifth game, I shouldn't say this because I need to go back and listen to it again, but it was an unbelievable statistic, like 67% of the time the D middies were on the field versus the O middies.
Yeah, you know
what? This was even in their new, you know, Tufts look-alike offense and all that.
Yeah, you're finding it everywhere. I mean, we go through it and we argue in the office about how much time our quote-unquote offensive middies spend on with our defense. And
yeah.
when you really look at it and you break it down, those guys aren't playing close to a quarter of the game on defense. But yet in practice, are you spending, you know, are you breaking it up 50% of the time on offense, 50% of the time on defense? Well, that's an unrealistic, you know, way to do it because that's not what you're doing in games.
Right.
And you want to try to simulate, you know, game situations.
Right.
You know, one of the things Coach Benson and I argue about all the time is, you know, hey, I want a little more time with the middies. You know, and his quick answer is, Coach, they don't play that much defense. You know, so you got to be careful to, you know, to find that happy medium and let them spend enough time in the area that they're going to spend it in a game and not spend too much time doing other things in practice that they're not going to do in the games.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you know, one of the conclusions they reached and it affected me, you know, because one of the things we've integrated into, you know, our practices now that I'm back at the high school level is, you know, a couple days a week it's purely two-way middies in all the drills. You know, we don't break them up O and D middies. Now, obviously, you know, when you get into a 6v6 scenario or you're in a scout look or there's a, you know, an invert scenario, you're playing an invert team or something like that, you know, there are times when you got to go back and really focus that. And they're D middies for a reason. You know, maybe they're great athletes, maybe they're great D middies. I mean, you remember my high school buddy, his kid Burkhart, you know,
yep.
Was a really strong player. I think ultimately a captain when he was a senior, wasn't he?
He was.
And I think he started as a D midi, turned out to be, you know, pretty good O midi at the end. But, yeah, those kind of things. Anyway.
Well, he was actually the exact opposite. He started in as an offensive midi, and we moved him to a defensive midi. And interestingly enough, he became more of an offensive weapon as a D midi. He became more of a transition midi. You know, and I think you're starting to see a little bit more coaches are starting to look at things that way. Instead of defining them as defensive middies, they're defining them as transition middies. And they're playing defense and then they're transitioning the ball and trying to create quick strike and early offense. You know, and some coaches are actually even naming them that, getting away from the old school D middie type name. And quite frankly, that's something that we're looking at and talking about here. Is are we pigeonholing these guys? Are we pigeonholing them by a specific name? And are we pigeonholing them by the way we're practicing? You know, when you're doing 4-on-4s, sure, you want your guys that are playing defensive midfield to probably get a few more reps on defense, but it's not going to hurt them to play offense. It's not going to hurt them to develop their skills. It's not going to hurt them to have to run by someone and shoot the ball on the run. So, you know, that's an area that this summer we as a staff taken a long, hard look at.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The years I spent coaching in the MCLA, you know, when you play the better teams in the MCLA, you know, you see a lot more of that, I think, even that you do coaching, you know, state championship teams at the high school level. You know, they've got guys that are just on the field for longer periods of time. Anyway, another story for another day. All right, man. So now we, I want to go back to one time. It's funny, you know, we got coaches on the podcast now that are actually practicing timeouts. You know, I mean, it'll be in the middle of a 4v3 drill. They'll pull those offensive guys off and say, no, you know, let's do this, and then put them right back into the 4v3 and capitalize. And, you know, when I talk to US Lacrosse or I talk at coaching clinics, I get a lot of raised eyebrows, you know. And I'm going, well, what kind of coach you think Petro is? And they're all going, man, he's a great coach. I'm going, what if I were to tell you he told me in 14 he was practicing halftime, you know, for the exact same scenarios. Actually, when I get off podcast with you guys, I'm always melancholy. My wife's going, how'd the podcast go? I'm going, the guy was great. I'm going, why are you so sad? Well, because he told me a bunch of stuff I should have been doing for 20 years that I never thought of. You know, I mean, that's a true story.
When we're all done learning, we're all done, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I wonder, you know, I don't want to go all philosophical on you here, but I wonder, you know, how long for lack of a better description, the pick and slip game is here. You know, because, you know, 10 years ago you had four or five coaches that were running a lot, and, you know, I mean, Bates kind of reintroduced it, and Tambroni kind of really ran it, and that kind of thing. And now you can't run it, even if you don't want to run it, you have to practice it, or your guys aren't going to be prepared for teams that have become so deft at running it. You know, I mean, the game definitely goes through ebbs and flows, and it's interesting for me, Coach. You know, we always, every year, you know, in December, I don't bother coaches. I write an article. What we learned this year, there are always new trends. Not 100% across the board, you know, but where 60% of the coaches, you know, were talking about doing this or doing that, which leads me to my next question. I was, I guess in the scheme of somewhat old school, you still spend a fair amount of time on 6v6 at Hopkins. And in our last podcast, you were talking about running the 6v6. And we had talked about 5-minute increments in practice, Coach. I don't know if that was something you got from Belichick, if I remember correctly, or something. But you were running 3 5-minute segments, and a lot of times 6v6 segments at the end of practice. The thinking at the time was that when they're tired and worn out mentally and physically, incidentally, you would put them in that 6v6. Are you still running your 6v6 at the end of practice? Is it still something you're doing 25 or 30 minutes a day?
We're mixing and matching, and, you know, I think we've kind of come full circle.
How answers that, man, mixing and matching? You all, the guy that's back hurts, you're doing a good job of walking both sides of the line,
That's an honest answer. You know, like I said, when we're done learning, we're done, and every team's different. You know, and so, you know, our 15 team was different than our 16 team, and our 16 team will be different than our 17 team, and obviously, you know, for us last year, our injuries played a huge part of it, and for us to think we were going to be able to get up and down and, you know, and run up and down, you know, with limited depth, you know, thank God we had very good depth, because when we got our injuries, that depth was challenged, and people moved up the depth chart, not down. And then when you start to look, you go, wow, you know, we don't have a whole lot behind this. So the way we practiced had to change. Length of practice had to change. I would tell you last year we spent more time doing skeleton offense than ever before. And, quite frankly, that was what we needed to do on offense, because we just didn't have the bodies. You know, what people don't realize, Mondays and Tuesdays, Shaq Stanwyck and, Ryan Brown don't practice, because of injuries that they had. So now you're trying to, you get guys through the week so they're ready to play on Saturday. And in doing all the skeleton, which is exactly what we needed to do, it was the appropriate thing to do given injuries and numbers, that impacts us defensively. Because we're not getting as much of the, you know, the one-on-one, the strength-on-strength stuff that, you know, we need. We're getting a great look from the scout group. But, you know, it's different when you're playing against Ryan and Shaq and, you know, Joel Tinney and those guys. You know, that's a better look at what we're going to see from our opponents in terms of ability.
Right.
So last year we were spending more time doing the half field, because that was the kind of team we needed to be because of depth and injuries. You know, this year we spent a lot more time talking about what you mentioned, is, you know, getting in and doing a 10-minute segment of 6-on-6 and then moving on to something else and then coming back to that same, you know, 6-on-6 segment, but maybe playing versus some pressure, and then doing another segment of 6-on-6, and maybe in that segment, you know, doing some invert stuff. You know, so we've done a little bit more of that, you know, prior to this year, and we'll go back to doing a lot more of that this year. But I think any coach is going to tell you, you got to adjust to your personnel and you got to adjust to your situation. And last year, you know, we were forced to change a great deal, and we were doing a ton of skeleton, which, you know, when you look at what you do on one side of the ball often impacts the other side of the ball, and people just don't realize that. So We're excited to kind of get back and be able to do a little bit more strength on strength. Obviously, you got to be careful with that. But to be able to do more half field out of full field, you know, to do, a 4-on-4 at one end, you know, down to a 6-on-6 down the other end. So we're, again, you know, multitasking a little bit and doing a few different things.
Yeah. And I think one of the questions that that I get the most, man, via email, and again, remember this, man, I'm no expert. I'm just an old man. But I talk to a lot of coaches, you know. Like Brody Merrill, would you be interested in doing a clinic at the Hill Camp? I'm going, Brody Merrill, what can I ever tell Brody Merrill? He goes, you know, you got like 37 ways to run 3v2 on your site that come from coaches like you, you know. I got like 18 in my notebook. And if somebody wants to know the difference between, you know, a Princeton practice under Bates or a Princeton practice under Tierney, you could probably tell them, and nobody else can. That's just because we've been doing this 7 or 8 years now.
So right.
One of the biggest questions to get is, you know, guys understand, especially, you know, with the influx of motion at the high school level and struggling with how do I keep my motion continuous, you know. We run through like 2 looks or 3 looks, and then we start over, or there seems to be a break, or then they freelance, we can't get back into it. You know, those kind of questions. And again, you know, I think the answer they don't look at up front is it really depends on your personnel, right? I mean, you can't, you know, don't coach what you don't have and coach what you do have. You know, if you don't have attack guys that can carry, then, you know, you got to post them or screen them and get them where they are in a position to be successful. But anyway, the question is this. As coaches are spending more and more time on skeleton and reaping the benefits of skeleton, they're running out of drills for their defensive guys to run without repeating the exact same stuff every day. You know, where they used to run skeleton 12 or 14 minutes and it was easy to have the guys do hub and spoke or sliding drills or coming back or whatever it turns out to be, you know, redirects for the curl, redirects here. You know, ground ball drills, all the kind of things that you watch the college coaches do. I think the biggest questions we get are, you know, I need more drills for my poles, man. You know, because I used to run 12 or 15 minutes of skeleton. Now some days I might be running 20 or 25 minutes of skeleton.
No doubt.
Do you have a general comment on that thought?
Yeah, sure. I would say it's, you know, a general, you know, it's everybody gaining a general understanding that, you know, times have changed. The season is longer. I mean, this has a lot to do with, you know, the season. You know, for us, we're trying to keep our guys fresh. We're trying to, you know, to be our best, playing our best lacrosse at the end of the year. You know, you got some injuries. You're trying to get your personnel through the week so they can strap it on and be ready to go on Saturday. You know, for guys in high school, you know, maybe they're limited in numbers. You know, so for us, you know, one of the things we're fortunate is we got a great scout group. So when we're doing skeleton down the other end, you know, we are capable of running, you know, a full 6-on-6, you know, set of drills with the defense and the scout. But, you know, as your depth is challenged, like ours was last year, you know, then your scout group gets challenged because now those guys are moving up the depth chart. So what we do here is we start to do drills where we're incorporating the defensive guys, you know, into offensive, into offensive roles. So if we're doing, you know, a slide and recover drill, you know, the defenders are playing offense as well as defense. If we're doing a clearing drill, then the defenders are doing the riding as well. You know, one of the drills that we use with both our offensive and defensive personnel, it's a 3-on-2 drill, but it's a 3-on-2 drill with tennis balls. And we'll go out. It's a great way to start a practice. It's a great way to breed competition. It's as simple as a drill as there is out there. The only difference is you're not playing with a lacrosse ball. You're playing with a tennis ball, which, you know as well as I do, forces you to really have soft hands, to really concentrate on catching and throwing. You know, you can put your goalie in there, and you're not worried about your goalie getting shelled, you know, with shots that are on top of them. And we'll go out, we'll split the defense up, you know, blue and white, and we'll put one group on offense, one group on defense. We got a bucket of tennis balls. Coach pops the ball into play, and what we do is we move the goals back into the ladies' crease. So we have the crease and then the arc, and everybody has to stay within the arc. So now our offensive guys, our 3 defenders that are playing offense, have to handle a tennis ball in tight quarters with pressure are two defenders that come out from the goal line each time, you know, have to work on, you know, getting aligned, communicating, rotating, you know, using appropriate stick arrival when they're trying to get out to get some pressure on a guy's hands. And then your goalie, you know, yeah, he's seeing a lot of shots, but he's seeing them with tennis balls and not lacrosse balls. So here, you know, we're working on a bit of rotation. We're working on communication defensively. We're really doing a lot of working on stick work and handling some pressure and handling, you know, a ball that's, you know, a little bit lighter. So, again, we're doing a number of different things in a simple three-on-two drill. And you go one bucket with one group. You switch color, you know, switch offense and defense. You go another bucket. You know, if you're tied up, you go overtime. You know, it breeds some competition. It's a fun drill. But those are the kind of ideas that I think you're referring to and talking to. You're trying to put your defenders in a position where you're able to do the things you'd be doing with offensive players. So in the end, if you've got defenders on the perimeter and they're banging the ball around and then, you know, they're dummy dodging, you're sliding, they're moving it, those guys are getting stick work. And you can never get enough stick work in a practice.
Love it.
So just, you know, we're using those guys to simulate the offense at times. You know, there's nothing like having those offensive guys and having them, you know, attack you full speed. But we can work on the picking game with defenders. Real easy. You just put a group on, in blue group, you know, group in white. You know, you set picks and you're working on flat picks. You know, you're working on back picks. You're working on swing picks. You're working on roll-off picks. You know, you're working, you know, you're working, if you, you got a 2-on-1 somewhere, you're working on snailing it, which for us is, means slow play it. There's lots of different ways to utilize those guys. I mean, in today's day and age, we can't get enough picking and screening. We could spend a whole practice on that. So for us to go down for a 10-minute segment while the offense is doing skeleton and work on the picking game with the defenders, I don't think it hurts us at all.
You're a pretty good coach, man.
Well, there's some that might think differently, but I certainly hope so.
No, that's we're gonna share that information. Like I said, there's kind of an influx of skeleton work and it just pains me to death, you know, when I'll work a camp or do something and the offense will be doing something or the shorties will be doing something and you look down and 12 minutes later they're still throwing the proverbial long passes metaphorically. And, you know, I'm going, somebody give me a spoon to shove down my throat. I need to throw up. You know, I mean, it's just awful, you know.
Well, we got a lot more. Look, we could use the work on the cross field passes, but we got a lot more than that to work on.
Yeah, but I mean, you can work on cross field passes, but, you know, a half hour is a half hour, man. I mean,
no doubt. Well, then that's when you break it up in the three segments. You do 10 of that. You know, you do 10 of technique or footwork or shadow drill or, you know, slide and recover or, you know, you work on ground ball play. You work on escaping, you know, from a double team or pinching a double. There's a ton of things that you can do. You just got to take the parts of the defense and the situations. You got to look at the situations and, you know, hey, you run a defense and you're a team that likes to double team a lot. Well, then you work on your double team. You have a defender carry the ball, one on them, you slide, you double team, and you just work on your angles and pinching that double. You know, there's lots of things you can do.
Awesome, man. Hey, one sexy new drill you threw in last year?
You know what? I don't know if there's any, you know, new sexy drill that we put in. You know, I think sometimes, you know, the sexy drill is you go backwards and you look back and you say, you know what? You know, we need to go back and get back to basics. And, you know, I think we've done a little bit more of that. I mean, we continue to try and create drills that, you know, simulate what we're doing, whether it's, again, pinching a double, whether it's trying to escape. You know, we had a ground ball drill we called Hungry Hippos, and it simulates the old, you know, the old game, you know, Hungry Hippos, and we'd throw about 20 balls, you know, in a little area, and guys had to, you know, to sprint in and grab a ball and sprint back out, put it down, and then sprint back in, and we're working on ground ball play. We're working on a little conditioning. We're working on a little competitiveness. you know, did a little bit of that. We did a little bit of, we call it chaos ground balls, where we'll put the whole darn defense out there, and short sticks included, and we'll put cones, and we'll kind of cone off a certain area, and we'll put it on the clock, you know, 1 minute, and we'll compete who can pick up the most ground balls in 1 minute, but they got to move around, and now they're moving around, and as they pick up a ground ball, I mean, it's chaos. There's bodies everywhere. So, you know,
and that's one ball at a time, Coach? You're rolling out one ball at a time into the area?
Yep, you got one ball. You each guy's got one ball, and you're picking it up as much as you can, but you got to move around within this confined area. And what happens is, well, one time you pick it up, there's no one around. The next time you're going to pick it up, and here comes another guy trying to pick up a ground ball. And, you got to flick it around them and go pick it up. You know, you got to face dodge a guy. You got to roll away from a guy. So we're just, you know, simulating, you know, escape patterns and, you know, different ways to pick up ground balls in a confined area, you know, under duress. And
now, chaos ground balls, that's a great name, Coach. Where have you been hiding that?
There you go.
Hey, listen,
so I guess we're not as vanilla as we think we are, then.
No, man. Somebody just needs to bring it out of you, you know?
Well, you know, you do that for 5 minutes. You know, that's tiring.
Oh, my gosh.
But in a five-minute period, you just picked up, you know, 60, 65 ground balls.
Yeah, we
do
that.
How many practices are you picking up 65 ground balls? You know, so there's a ton of those drills. You know, you just got to get a little creative, and you just got to look at, you know, what are situations that you face in games, and how do I create a drill to do that? And I think there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of coaches out there that do a great job of doing just that. You know, rather than just going to the traditional, let's do 6-on-6 or let's do 4-on-3s, you know, they create different drills that simulate the things they're going to see in a game.
Yeah, I don't do much conditioning, but if we're going to run 50-yard sprints, we'll have the guys, one day they got to drop 4 times and pick it up. One day they got to roll 5 times, or we'll run it like a reverse. You know, you pick up 2 ground balls, and then you have to roll the ball behind you and go pick it up, integrating the GBs into the conditioning.
Yeah, you know, I'm a big believer that if you can, you know, run a fast-paced practice, which is something that we work very diligently to do here. I mean, we give ourselves 1 minute.
Before I let you go, are you still in the, you had talked about in 14 going down to like 1:20, 1:30. Are you still in that mode, Coach?
Later in the year we get to that. Certainly not early in the year. As the year, you know, presses on, you know, Mondays, you know, become a day where we just, we'll lift, and then we'll get into film. You know, we might stretch, we'll lift, we'll get into some film, and it'll be more of a mental day than a physical day after, and we, you know, we start to get to that, you know, somewhere a little bit after, you know, halfway of the season. You know, our whole season, you know, half of our regular season is like a full high school season for some of these kids. So, you know, you always hear, he hit the proverbial freshman wall. You know, we're trying to avoid that. We need those freshmen to play like sophomores, you know, at the end of the year when school's over and, you're competing in the Big Ten and tournament and, you know, in the NCAAs. So, you know, we're trying to do a little bit less later, and less is more sometimes, but early in the season, we obviously were out there a little bit longer, have a little bit more to do and a little bit more to cover, but, you know, you hope you can get a lot of your conditioning in practice. Like I was saying, we give it 1 minute between each drill. You know, we want to get from drill to drill to drill and not waste time standing around, but I still believe that there's a lot to be said for getting on that end line, you know, and doing some conditioning, whether it's, you know, a 4-stop or, you know, a 300. You want to do some things that obviously simulate game situation, where it might be a sprint jog type thing. But there is a lot to be said for that mental, overcome that mental hurdle of getting on a line. You're tired. It's the end of practice and, oh man, here we go. You know, we got a condition now. I think that brings on a bit of a mental toughness that every team needs.
Hey, listen, man. Before I let you go, I want to be respectful of your time because, like, this will be the first time in 8 years I've been respectful of time. Yeah, we want to talk about, for the listeners, man, if you're sending kids to the Hopkins Camp, new website, kind of a new name, Petro Lacrosse Camp. Boy, is that clever. Where'd you come up with that?
Yeah, you know, back to those vanilla names. You know, I'm real good with those exciting names.
Yeah, three sessions in the summer with the Benson and Dwan, the staff. Great stuff. It's petrolacrosse.com. We'll have all the links. You know, when you get done listening to this podcast, just click on that link. those of you that get on it right away, another session starting in 3 days. But generally they run in July. So we will get all that up and out for you, Coach. And again, man, you are the greatest thing since sliced bread, and we wish you nothing but great things.
Well, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time. I enjoy it. This is a welcome distraction with all the recruiting that's going on this summer and all the monotony. It's nice to actually talk some X's and O's and, you know, talk about practice and things like that. So I appreciate the distraction and the time.
Well, I understand this. You know, I'm not Kirk Kucinich, you know, but at the end of the day, we're not Lax Bro guys either. We're just trying to give coaches new ideas and new ways to prepare their kids to be successful. And guys like you and all the 100-plus hours, I'm humbled, you know, by the site. I mean, Coach, it's amazing, man. I mean, 1,500 guys will read this article in the next 24 hours once I get it posted, you know?
You know what, though? That's what this is about. It's great stuff. It's informational exchange. You know, I hope I get to go on, and I do go on. And I you know, we're looking for a drill, you know, to help us in this area. I mean, I'm not so big that I can't grab a drill from someone else, whether it's a competitor or, you know, it's a guy I know. I mean, we're all trying to just, you know, be the best we can be. And if we're not willing to listen and learn, then, you know, we got bigger problems.
All right, man. Stay on the line with me here so I can thank you. Special thanks, Coach Petromala. Big round of applause, everybody, in my one-man office. This happens to be the world headquarters of LaxCoachMike.com in Atlanta, incidentally. Guys, you've got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously, man. Until next time, God bless everybody.